Welcome to the Road to the Trials podcast, where we take an insider's look into the training and racing of some of America's best runners as they prepare for the Olympic Trials in 2024. Today, we got Nico Montañez, fresh off a fantastic performance. Nico, welcome to the show.
Yes, thank you for having me back, Matt.
I can't wait to hear all about it. So tell the people where you ran last weekend.
I ran in the streets of New York City. So it was a United New York City half marathon. And it was a great race. It was fun. So,
all right. So I know this was a race that is interesting because it always seemingly gets a lot of high level athletes every single year. But at the same time, especially for some of the New York City events, it's like in terms of a popularity thing, it does feel like a little niche, little not niche, right? It's interesting because I don't know a lot of people who run the race, but it also brings in a huge crowd of people who will, from a pro's perspective, I should say the people who run the race, is there's a lot of really good half marathons that day. Like I know in New England, like the New Bedford half is that day, and that draws a ton of people in New England, which is not far from where you're running at that time. You got that race and some others as well that bring in. I think Shamrock is that weekend. There's a lot of races that are similar distance on that day, and I know for a lot of people that serves as like a really good time of year who are doing Boston prep, which you are one of those people. So talk to me about just the race selection process. Like, I guess, when does it start? Like, once you know you're doing Boston, like, what are some of the things that you think about in terms of the races you want to do and ultimately the factors that play in to making the final decision?
Yeah, all those are good questions. So
too many questions at once. So feel free to take whichever one you want first.
Awesome. I actually didn't have this on my schedule at all. My agent had reached out to me and asked if I wanted to run New York City Half. I turned them down. I was kind of under last year before Chicago, I didn't race a single race because all eyes were on Chicago. It was laser focus. It was, you know, get everything I can out of this race. And it turned out to be a really great experience for me. So this year, same thing. I was like, no, it's okay. Like I'll pass. Especially after the way cross season had ended for me, not so great. So I wasn't really enthusiastic to race. I was just put my head down, train, hide in the mountains and then come out really fit, come Boston. But then the more I thought about it, it kind of just was like, man, that'd be kind of cool to run in New York City. And I've never been, in terms of like a marathon or on the streets of New York City, I've only been to the Armory. So I haven't really got that true experience, I think, of sightseeing and racing. And so that was something that I finally wanted to put on the calendar. And so I told Ray, told my agent, I told Andrew, and, Sam calls up Andrew and goes, hey, you know, what's the deal? He turned us down and then now he wants to race. Like what's going on? It just kind of wanted to get like, okay, hey, like, you know, like what's the deal here? So, I don't know. I kind of felt cool. Like maybe Sam's calling my coach to figure out like, you know, what's the deal? What's going on here? That happened. And then, training had been going well. But I didn't really know where I was at. It was just more of like, this is the perfect timing because it's still 4 weeks out, 3.5 weeks out before Boston. We would do a really hard session anyway, so why not go and race and try to earn some money on top of that? But also it was a way for me to kind of like rebound from cross and have zero expectation coming into this race, and then see what would happen, see where my fitness was, because I didn't have any idea. Training here in Mammoth has been hectic. We've had a lot of snow.
Has it been the snowiest place in the world over the last 2 months? I saw that stat somewhere.
Yeah. No, it has been. And we're north of like 630 inches of snow. That's a lot of snow.
630 inches of snow?
Yeah. We're north of that now.
Oh my God.
Yeah. So,
I mean, that's like above a house. I feel like...
You should see the windows.
I don't know where it is. Like you come back to Mammoth from New York, you're like, where's my house? I don't know. There's just a bunch of snow everywhere.
Exactly. training for that and then preparing my mind for that and really just going in there. And I knew the course was going to be hard and difficult and it's hilly. And so this was just great prep. All I kept thinking was like, great prep, great prep, great prep. And thankfully, Sam was able to offer me a little bit of money. Obviously, like hotel and travel are usually comped for these type of bigger races, so that was nice. But I wasn't expecting anything, especially because I asked so late in the game, and with the feel that they bring to New York City. I mean, Kiplimo and Cheptegei. I mean, those two alone are worth a lot. So I was just thankful to even be there, and I didn't really focus too much on the field. It's just more of like, okay, I came here to accomplish one goal, and that was to figure out where I am at. How can I run strong, and then kind of be a different person from the cross season that I didn't finish so well. So
It's so
yeah,
funny
that was
because
fun.
like it's so interesting how the ending of Cross has obviously played a big role in you just from a mental perspective when it comes to racing. Because preceding that, you had a number of good races. Like you ran exceptionally well for like a year and a half. It's like you had this one experience and it seems to be weighing on you or was weighing on you to some degree. You mentioned it now several times in like the 5 minutes we've been talking. So has that always been the case with you? Like you the negative races have a far greater impact than say like the positive races can have on your psyche. I know oftentimes you see like with coaches that for basketball or football, things like that, they say like, hey, like the losses take much more of a toll than like the winning can provide like the opposite effect, right? Do you feel like the same sort of effect happens for you?
To an extent, yeah. I think the reason that cross hurt so much was that I realized like I abandoned myself. I started to question like where my fitness was, and I kind of fell in like this. It's interesting because I don't want to throw the word depression out, just whatever. But I felt like I had lost all belief in myself, and so I had defeated myself before I even got to the start line. And so that New York City for me was re-engaging in that, re-establishing that belief system. And so, I'm okay with bad races if it's I gave everything, but I didn't give one like single energy I feel like to cross. I mean, I started the race, but it was long over before I even got to Virginia. So that one was just like, all right, we gotta take a step back and realize who you are again, and what it means to be a runner. And so it just like it kept dawning on me, like, yeah, New York City is like where I can take out my anger, if you will. And maybe not anger, but just like that belief system, and then hopefully inspire other people along the way. So.
And you, in our first conversation, you talked openly about just your time with, talking to, a therapist and things like that. Was there any talk of like how to reframe cross and how to reframe it in a way to use it either as fuel or as a positive moving forward?
Yeah, we definitely reframed it. He went over a little bit of an exercise with me the night before the cross race, and he asked me, I might butcher it, but he asked me, what would it mean to make Team USA and to wear that jersey and to go to Australia? And it was only after the race that he was like, yeah, I could tell you had trouble answering that question because you made this race so big, so much bigger than it needed to be. And so that was the refocus and restructure, was like seeing the field for New York City, knowing it's a brutal course, being in New York alone, it's like everything grabs your attention and you can't really focus. So it was like, who cares that I'm in New York City? I care, but who cares about the field? I care a little bit, but it was like refocusing and saying, I am here to do one thing, and that's like reestablishing like who I am. And like this half marathon in New York City is no different than maybe a half marathon in San Diego. They're the same distance. I kept telling myself, like, no, like New York isn't longer than the other. And so that was like some mental tools that I had to develop again, which is like, I wouldn't say shocking, but really cool to know that like the learning process never stops. But just understanding like, Even if it is something huge like New York City, like it doesn't need to be bigger than me. So just go out there and race, and it's like an everyday thing, you know?
Yeah, I wonder if approaching race day for a pro is harder than it is for an amateur to approach it in that sense, right? Because it'd be very easy, and I'm sure you've done this, where it's like, hey, this isn't just like a race I'm doing. This is literally my job. This is my livelihood. I have sponsors. I got this. I got that, right? Like, not that you want to go down that. I'm not trying to like put that in your head at all. But I can see how it would be easy for someone to spiral down that, right? Just to like to go down that because like people can spiral with much less, right? There are plenty of amateur runners listening to this who maybe felt very similar thoughts before their race where like nothing was externally tied to the result of anything besides just like, hey, you know, because there's plenty of amateurs who'd be like, all right, like I asked my spouse to like, you know, like sacrifice their weekends for me or like I have time away from my kids to do this. And like, if I don't do well, like what would it all mean? And like, I've been there. I've spiraled like that before. So, it's interesting to hear that. But at the same time, like, as a pro athlete, I can imagine it feeling like the stakes are, it's, you know, connecting the stakes to the outcome could be so much more tangible as opposed to just being like, hey, it's all about the process. It'd be like, yeah, it's easy for you to say, like, but the results actually really matter to me. So how are you able to handle both sides of that? And and like I almost want to use like a golf analogy where it's like the only way to like swing a golf club really well, and not that I'm great at it, is like you hold the club and you can't hold it too tight. Like if you hold the club too tight, you're actually gonna be less flexible and you'll hit it less far, even though you may be trying harder, you'll actually hit it less far because you lose all the flexibility in your hand. So if you have to like to hold it tight enough, but not too tight to like to manage it, and it seems like from a mental perspective, from a racing side of things, that you kind of want to have that same duality.
No, there's you're right. There's some like expectations though. So I don't want to make it seem like I was just in there and then out, and then like I didn't give a care. So, but like I definitely cared about every like I thought about the sponsors and you know other people running in an ASICS uniform and what it would mean if I beat or didn't beat them, and so those things crossed my mind. I think the reason that I'm able to be successful with it now is because I have had experiences where I do go with this. And this is just what I do, and having that expectation of like not really putting too much emphasis has worked in the past. So I have something to look back on every time I do kind of spiral, because that'll happen time and time again. I'm sure at the Olympic trials, you know, the biggest stage where you have to be top three, that'll happen there. But I can be able to look back and look at past experiences and say, oh yeah, that worked out for me. Because I have had in the past where putting all my eggs in one basket has not worked out. And so I don't want to like relive those moments because I know what the outcome typically is. And so this outcome of like not applying too much pressure, it's like that perfect dose. So and then it helps, you know, when you know, my former BYU teammate was there, Rory Linkletter. Like I was awesome to just kind of sit with him, and we've been through this before. Like I know what that feels like being his teammate and racing nationals. So like just like a like runners are kind of like the same. Like we know we have this immense pressure on us, but at the end of the day, like we're all here for each other too, and we want to bring out the best in each other.
Absolutely. And I wonder if that's also one of the benefits of just racing more. Do you feel like the more you race, especially in against high level competition, that sort of, you know, handling that process becomes easier, or is it always just it's always tricky, and no matter how often you do it?
I think for me, it's tricky. You know, and I have to, I can, I like, I know some like signs now where I'm like, oh, I'm putting way too much pressure on myself for this race, you know? So I'm able to identify those. So I think for me, it's like, it's tricky and it's not tricky. Like it kind of bounces back and forth.
All right, so you're going into this race, you're going against some really high level competition. You finished seventh overall, second American, it's time of 63 flat, 63 flat, is that right?
63.
Oh, right. So like, right, you ran an incredible race. It's a loaded field. It always is. So when you're heading into a race like this, where you certainly have enough time from a recovery perspective to have it not influence like how you're going to do in Boston, how does it factor into your training? Like, does your training differ because you have this half coming up, or is it the same sort of training that you would normally do for Boston during like weeks, you know, 8, 7, 6 in the countdown to Boston? Like, how does this play a part in that?
Yeah, we've definitely wanted to like do a slight taper, but not an immense taper. The last like 2 days before the race, I tapered, which is like probably just running like 10K worth both days in Central Park. So the race was Sunday, Saturday ran 10K strides drills, and then Friday would be another 10K of work. But besides that, everything was pretty on par with high mileage, if you will. And I still did a pretty hard workout that Wednesday. Nothing really like changed too much except just like 2 extra days of rest with like no doubles. And that seems to help me a lot. But I knew like the legs could feel fatigued, but that's okay because you could still push through that, you know, which is always the fun part of racing. So figuring that part out for me. For me personally, like I do want to respect the race too, because Sam, the elite coordinator, flew us all out and paid for us and gave us entry fees. Like, I want to respect him too and not just be like, oh yeah, I got 15th, you know, and thanks and run off with the money. You know, it's like, for me, it's still important to place well. ASICS is watching, my coach is watching, my agent, like people are watching. And so for me and the Mammoth Track Club, it's like, I want to taper a little bit so that I can represent, everyone well, because it's a championship race, you know, the way I see it. So
absolutely. And is there a big difference, or what is the difference, I should say, between half marathon training and marathon training at your level? It doesn't seem like there's a huge difference in pace. So is it what mm-hmm. is the difference, if there is any?
I think if I were to like train specifically for the New York City half, I would have lowered my mileage a bit, and then focused on the more threshold, higher intensity, for example, like 3x3 mile, and maybe going 440 to 445 pace per 3 mile repetition. So something at that like high ceiling, high, you're getting your engine really high. But maybe you scale back from like 130 and 40 miles to 115, 110. So something like that. But it is, you know, you're still going out for your doubles. Like, I think what people should know is that like the marathon is 99% aerobic. I don't have the percentages on the half, but it's still pretty
much
aerobic.
The same, right?
Yeah. So you need that base, right, to sustain you, especially if you want to go and shoot for a PR. So, but I think like, yeah, higher intensity versus like, okay, let's focus on 5 minute pace, you know, I go a little bit quicker for maybe some of my repetitions.
Right. And I think there's these gradations within like the aerobic side of things, right? So whether you're doing the 5 zone model or the 3 zone model, you know, you can hit, you know, these moderate, you know, moderate being a term of art here, but you know, these moderate paces for whatever the person's doing that can be at the higher end of aerobic, if not slightly leading past aerobic, depending on how, you know, things are progressing or, you know, how deep into the workout it is. But at the same time, like you said, like it can be significantly aerobic, but at the same time, like when you're thinking about this stage in a marathon build, are you ever touching like 5K pace and workouts beyond like strides at this point in the game? Or like when are you doing, or where does the fast stuff come in and where does it start to get cycled out in a typical training block for you?
Yeah, that's a good question. Cause like sometimes I feel like I don't know if I would say I would be doing it wrong. But I think my base has allowed me to push the envelope more. So for example, like my doubles now are up to 6, 6.5 miles in the evening. So that's,
at what,
you know,
pace?
45. It just depends if I can get on the, if I'm usually on the treadmill these days. So that's about 7:30 to 7:20 pace. But if I'm outside, you know, on the roads, it's closer to 7:15, 7:10. And that's just something I haven't really like, okay, I have to go hit this pace. It's like, it just starts to come naturally. That first mile is like 8 minutes. And then like you kind of get past that and you're like, oh, I feel great. And so my point to that is because of all this high mileage I feel like I've had in the base and I'm starting to do now, I'm able to kind of unload on my Tuesday sessions, which are our speed sessions. And no, it's no longer that 440 paces. Like, I don't consider that speed. I consider that threshold. For me, like, if we had mile repeats, for example, when we did them yesterday because I got back from travel and gave me a couple of days, and I was able to close out my last mile on 420, on the road, just out point to point mile repeats. And so for me, I think it's really important to touch that speed because you don't want 450 to feel fast, or
Right, and
455 to feel
420
fast.
pace for you is what we're talking about, is like basically critical velocity, close to 5K pace, depend, right? But you're also at, is it 420, but you're at elevation. So that basically is 5K pace, if not a little faster.
And I'll warm up into it. I might start at 435, 440, depending on how I feel. But by the third rep, I'm hitting mid 420s. And we go down in elevation. We go down to 4,500 feet, which is still high.
Yeah, I should say.
But I'm able to breathe better and develop a lot of power. But I think that's so critical in marathon training. And maybe some people will argue that, I don't know, but I just think, like, again, I don't want my race pace to feel like it's a 420 effort, because if that's the case, then I think I'm in trouble. So
Yeah, that's a great point, especially when you're talking about not only the fitness side of things, but also like the psychological part, right? Where even if you're like, hey, we did all this work and I spent all this time at marathon pace, like we really dialed it in, if you feel like you're, if your feelings about the pace differ from like what your body's actually experiencing, I don't even know if that's possible, but I can see how that would be, that discrepancy would be something that's significant. And you're, when you're going doing like that workout, like, I love to walk through this. So you're coming back from an extremely hard effort, right? You start, you're doing this workout, the mile repeats. You know, how many repeats are you doing? You said you're at 4,500 feet. What does the recovery look like in terms of not only duration, but is it walking recovery? Is it jogging recovery? Like, how exactly is that workout going?
So this is a classic Joe Vigil VO2 max workout, and for me it was 7 by mile and 3 minutes rest. But by the second minute, I'm ready to go again. But that would defeat the purpose, I think, of getting to those faster speeds. So I take the full 3 minutes, even though I feel very recovered after like 90 to 2 minutes. So yeah, just classic VO2, and it's really important to just get down to those whatever that is for you too. Like, it doesn't have to be, 420. It's whatever you feel like I'm getting the most out of myself today, and then you learn along the way. But yeah, for this one, the coach was like, all right, you traveled, you raced, let's respect it a little bit. But I felt good, and I think that speaks to just the mileage, and maybe I just did a really great recovery. I don't know, but I just felt good, so I kind of went for it, and yeah.
Are you getting splits along the way? Are you looking at a watch? Or are you merely going by effort?
Coach does every 200 meters, so I'm checking pretty frequently, I would say, but nothing specific. Like, if I go out and the first lap is 66, I'm like, okay, well, probably slow, but like, it's good to kind of get out fast and like feels what this feels like, and then try to sustain that, and there's some undulation and one of the reps going back, and so that's a harder last 400, so I definitely make sure to push. But for me, I think I've had teammates in the past get really upset with me because if I sense any hesitation in myself, I will pick up the pace. If I sense that I'm getting fatigued, I will just go, like, I will throw in a 100 meter, and not all out, but I want to push myself so much that I'm making sure I'm getting the most out of myself. And so for me in practice, sometimes I feel bad for my teammates because they're like, the pace just shifted, like, all of a sudden, and I'm like, I'm so sorry. Like, I just don't want to I don't want to be that guy, but I am that guy. You know, I just like I have this opportunity and I want to take advantage of it. But there have been times where I have gone too hard. Maybe Andrew, my coach, wouldn't say that, but I think there have been times where, like, okay, I could have scaled that back a little bit. I did this workout probably 2 weeks before New York, maybe more, and I was able to close my last mile in 4:17, a little quick. And that's why I scaled it back and was like, okay, now I learned my lesson, and 4:17 is probably a little quick for what I'm doing for the marathon, but that was nice to know. And times don't really mean anything, it's just all effort. So, but it was cool to like learn from that experience and now scale it back to workout. And I think I ended up averaging better this mile repeat session than I did the last one. So, I think like progress is what it's all about. So, times are
Yeah. And I
nothing.
think it's important for people to think about this who are listening to this. Like, your mile repeats may be very different than some of the listeners might be thinking about it. Like, they might be thinking, like, oh, if I'm doing 7 by mile at critical velocity slash VO2 pace, that might, for them, that might be like 7:30s to 8:30s or even 9 minute pace, where it's like, yeah, all right, well, you might not necessarily want to be doing 72 minutes of work if you're doing 9 minute pace on your 7 by mile. Right, that would be a ton of work. That'd be, like at a really high effort. Whereas for you, again, I think this is where time on feet versus mileage can play such a big part. When you people start to really think about these times, like, again, you're running, roughly, 4:30-ish for a lot of these, 4:20 to 4:30, which is very different than maybe some people listeners, just in terms of trying to think about their own workout. So I just want to put that out there, not as a caveat. More just like a, hey, make sure that people aren't like transposing, oh, well, Nico's doing this, so I'm gonna do it. It's like this workout could be very different. Where like for the some brothers person might just be like, no, maybe 6 by 5 minutes would be a very kind of a similar workout as for you, like 7 by mile would be.
Yeah, I love that. And the biggest thing that I want to get at now that we're talking, and it gets me excited to talk about this, because I feel like I've just been blessed with so much information that I can share, and maybe some of it is wrong, maybe some of it's like a hoax, but I feel like you said, that 30 minutes of work, 6 by 5 minutes, like as long as you're in that zone and you're working that zone, like I could have done, I don't know, 7 by 1200, and that would have been fine, because I'm in that zone for 3 plus minutes, 4 plus minutes, like that's really what it's all about. And so that's what I mean. Like, it's not about the times. It's not about how cool it is to say that I closed this mile. It was like, how long were you in that zone, and what was the purpose of the workout? So, and the faster times just come with being able to warm up into the run, and it's your last one, and you can push yourself a little bit. So that's kind of like what I'm trying to get at the most.
Yeah, for sure. And obviously, when you think about how hard the effort's going to be, it has to be related to the recovery piece, right? Like, if you were doing 1 minute jogging recovery after every roughly 4 to 4 minute 30 second interval, you might have paced this a little differently.
Yeah, totally. I did actually forget to answer that question. So I was just a standing 3 minute rest. So no jogging. I mean, you could have. Coaches, he's indifferent. But again, it's a VO2 max workout. So if I'm jogging for 3 minutes and my pace starts to slow, we might switch to a standing. Well, we would switch to a standing rest, because that the purpose is now defeated if we're not hitting that zone again, so.
Now, do you plan on doing a workout like this or a similar, like a workout with the same sort of intent as this, in the 3.5 weeks leading into Boston? Or is there more of a situation where you're kind of tightening up what you're doing and making it more race specific?
Yeah, I would say every Tuesday. So now we've done miles. Next will probably be Ks. Closer to race week, we'll do 800s, which 4s and 8s are reserved for the beginning of the season and the end of the season. And then everything else in between is that the miles, 12s, Ks, 2Ks. The real, like, this is hard, So yeah, it'll be like we pretty much transition every Tuesday, but what we're doing mostly like fast speed. So if we do Ks next time, I would hope, if I'm feeling good and I'm not too tired from the mileage, that I'm going through the same pace as like a 430. So I think that's like around 250 per K. So nothing crazy, just like filling that out and just making sure that feels good.
So what does the rest of the week look like? So you have your Tuesday track day normally, not this week because of the race, but normally it's track day Tuesday. Do you have a tempo day and then a long run day identified ahead of time? Do you work on like a normal 7-day schedule? Like what does the normal schedule and timing of things play out?
We do work on a very normal 7-day schedule. Andrew got that from Coach Vigil and Bob Larson. Since the race and travel, things got a little bit jumbled. But so yeah, Thursday was our speed session. Saturday I will do 200s, something that me and my teammate developed last year to keep that speed like faster than what I would go from my mile repeats. And so I really liked that implementation. So we'll do that Saturday, and then Monday will be our last long hard run, which are definitely like my favorite. And I think, I mean, you can't say one workout like separates you from anyone else or anything else, but I feel like my long run workouts have drastically improved, and that's what's helped me become the marathoner that I am. So I'm really looking forward to Monday.
So are you doing intensity 3 times a week then, or is it 4 times a week?
So let's see,
Not if you're
Tuesday,
not
yes.
including strides, not including strides as
Yeah.
intensity, just more like the scheduled workout type stuff. And I would say from an intensity perspective, I mean like if like not counting like an easy long run, but say if
Okay.
you put like, workout segmentation within the long run, or if it's like, hey, we're doing a fast finish, we're moving up to moderate pace or whatever.
Okay, yeah. So on a normal 7-day week, it's Tuesday speed, Friday tempo, Saturday long run. So in a way, I would say twice a week, because then it's every other week is that 3 times I'm going harder.
Okay.
So we just kind of switch it up. We definitely switch it up so we can give that body the rest it needs.
So what is, obviously I'm not asking you to be like, all right, like tell me why you don't agree with your coach. But like I'm more like if you say you were in charge of your training, do you personally like doing tempo day apart from long run, or would you like to have them like tempo within the long run? So I know some people like to do both and some people like to segment it and some people maybe go back and forth.
I think knowing what I like what I've experienced and learned now, I like the tempo just being the tempo, and then the long run just being the long run. Because tempo for, I mean, I know tempo has like a bunch of different like definitions. But I like to go faster than race pace on my tempos. And then long run is what I feel is equivalent to race pace at the altitude that we're running at. So it's different for me, yeah.
So for your long runs, you kind of work up to marathon effort.
Yeah, I now what our long runs look like. So we do every other week. We do 1 week might be an easy 2-hour and 30-minute long run. So we're not doing anything crazy. It's probably 6:30 pace at best, if we're up at 8,000 feet. And
And to put
then
that in
that
perspective,
next.
that's 90 seconds per mile slower than like marathon pace. For people like, what does 6:30 pace mean? Like that's fast. We're like, well, it's not fast for Nico. This is like, again, this is like a minute and a half slower than marathon pace. I mean, obviously you have to, factor in the elevation here, but I just want to put that in perspective for people in case they're losing sight of it.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, that's kind of like it's good to aim for that, because I used to go so slow. Like if I averaged 7 minutes, that was a good day. And I realized I wasn't really increasing my aerobic zone, my aerobic fitness, until I started to kind of go quote unquote
Because that was
faster
probably
in my
zone
long
one
run.
for you, 7 minute pace. If
Sometimes
you're like at
slower.
your FA, if you're at peak fitness.
Yeah, sometimes I'd go slower, and then I'd get into the marathon and I'd be like, what is this feeling after 20 miles? I don't get it. I thought I was super fit, right? I can close a mile in 4:20. But that doesn't matter. So yeah, I learned that the long run needs to be a little more efficient as you get fitter, and you'll it's more of just like a feeling thing. You know to pick up the long run. But I would never pick it up faster than 6 minute pace. Because knowing that the next week I have the fast long run, the golden long run. And so what that looks like is a 2 mile warm up, And then I go down to 4,500 feet because that's where there's no snow, thankfully. And I start, depending on if I have a downhill so I can prepare for Boston, I'll shoot the downhills pretty quickly. And then the rest of the way is pretty standard. But I try to aim for an average of 515 to 520 at 4,500 feet for, I've done that now. I did one in Flagstaff, so I started at 90 minutes and I averaged 525. Great day. And then I did an hour 45 minutes here at 4,500 feet and I averaged 520. And then now I'm moving up to 2 hours. And the purpose of this workout is not so that I can look fancy with my pace, but to determine, okay, this is what I think sub 5 would feel like at sea level. And then the concentration for 2 hours. So my goal on Monday is to get 22 plus miles in, depending on, how fast I go and attack the downhills and then stay really emotionally controlled throughout the entire run. So the purpose isn't to kill this workout. It's just to concentrate, take my fluids. And then, after mile 20, 21, 22, the legs start to, they feel like lead. And that's what this workout is trying to accomplish, is to know and t teach my body and my brain, hey, I can still move at a relatively quick pace, even though my legs feel like they're about to fall off. So,
I love
yeah.
that idea of maintaining focus for 2 hours, because anyone who's run a marathon knows that that's exactly right. Like that is a major part of it. But oftentimes when we think about training, and say for a lot of people, the thought of like being able to concentrate for a certain amount of period for a certain period of time doesn't really figure into the training calculus. More like, all right, I want to make sure like my legs are strong enough and my fitness is good enough and I practice my marathon pace and all of those things. Whereas like focus and concentration often are not words that get thrown around in a training plan. So it's really interesting to hear you say that. And I think it also dovetails nicely with going back and talking about your race last weekend, because certainly if you're going to be racing, your focus has to be on high, right? Like you're there, unlike a lot of people, like say myself, I go to a race, it really is a time trial, right? Like I'm not really racing the people next to me. There's thousands of people and I don't even know, like, even if I'm like, hey, when I'm running against the other master's runners, it's like, I don't know who's a master's runner around here. So it's more like just like this group time trial. Whereas you go to New York, you're racing. You are there. You see Ben True. You see Reed Fisher. You see other people. You're like, all right, it's go time. So talk to me about how you approach that race with that in mind, and just how the race, like how I guess, well, we can go step by step, but I guess approaching race day, how do you go into that with the idea of running your paces, but also competing, and what that feels like. Going from the intellectual exercise of planning that out versus like, all right, now I'm actually running, and here's how it actually is playing out.
I think for me it's all about staying in the front pack as long as I can and surviving. And then if I do happen to get dropped, and there's some, like, you have to use, like, you have to be smart. Like if those guys went out in like 420 pace, then yeah, of course I'm not going with them. But so I have to use some sort of, like smarts there and understanding and what I can do. But I think given the race conditions, it was 31 degrees at the start, I believe, and then 13 to 12 mile an hour winds from the east. So it was cold. And I didn't think anyone was breaking away necessarily. So I knew that helped me kind of just accept the fact that this was going to be a slower day. And I think that really helped my mindset. And so when that race went off, our first mile was 5 minutes.
Wow.
We're talking about the world
Wow.
record holder in the half marathon is running. He's jogging.
Yeah. This sounds like the Olympic mile where everyone just kind of jogs the first like 600 meters.
So I thought about like 3 miles in or 4 miles in, I looked at him. Well, I mean, he didn't see me look at him, but I thought, like, this must be the easiest payday for him. Like, this has to be. This has to be. Like, I couldn't get over it. I was like, maybe I feel too good because I'm thinking too much. I gotta go. But yeah, I thought of funny moments like that throughout the race. But for me, it was like, I know that I can run with the top Americans. I don't, it's not about being better than anyone. I don't think I'm better than Ben True or Reed Fisher or whoever else you want to throw out. I just think, like, for me, it's about having this ultimate belief system that when I go out and race, I can run with the best in the country and in the world. And if I hold that, like, I then I end up competing well with some of these guys that I again, I don't think I'm better than. I have this belief system that I can be with them and they inspire me to do well. And so, yeah, just having that, given the race conditions and how I knew it was going to be slow. And so it was just an awesome experience to be like, okay, no one's really breaking away unless they have some serious, mental strength and heart, And so knowing that it was going to be probably a big pack for a while was like very comforting for me because I run the best off those type of races, I think, in my opinion. And so that's just like, okay, I know that I can pick it up the second half and do really well. So.
That's interesting because it seems to be in conflict with how you approach some of your track days, right? You said before, like on this track day, it's like, hey, you take a very proactive approach to pacing off of how you feel. Whereas like the way you just described race day, it seems like you're much more reactive. So like, hey, what's going on around me? And then let other people kind of dictate the terms and they'll just kind of like hang in there.
I feel like you're like piercing my soul right now because I truly feel that, and I'm getting like goosebumps because I don't know why I attack workout days. Maybe because I know the course and I've been here for 5 years and I know coach and I know he's gonna be on the bike and I know when to push and when not to push. So like maybe that has more to do with it, but that's something that I'm trying to develop and bring it out of myself. And New York City was the perfect race. So even though I ran 63, I was, and you can, I don't know, I feel like maybe Reed Fisher or Frank Lohr would back this up. Like, I felt like I was pushing that chase pack a lot to go and like try to catch guys like Andy Butchart and Chesarek, the guys who have fallen off. And at one point in the race when we did separate, I was like, I don't know why I hesitated. But like looking back, I'm like, the way that I felt in Thursday's workout, the way that I felt, after the race, I'm like, I could have gone harder, and I don't know if that means that I beat guys like Zuhair and I placed top three or beat Ben Chu. Like, I don't know what that means, but I know for me, it just means like back to the drawing board. And how many races is it going to take for me to stop being reactive? And I think that you need to be a little bit of reactive, but you need to be proactive. Dina Castor is a great example. She just freaking kills people. Like, when she raced, she was, come get me, let's see what you got. And so like I want to develop that type of mentality. And so I felt like I did certain parts of the races because I found myself pushing the chase pack, going and catching people, like, hey, I don't want those guys to get too far. But I was still like the wind hit and the cold hit and I was still far behind, but I would still push. So yeah, I'm in this weird, I don't know if we'd call it a dilemma, but where I'm like, I approach practices different than races. And Coach Istone always has taught me the way you train and practice is the way you probably are going to race. And for some reason, I'm still being that hesitant person. Maybe because I don't want to blow up. I don't know. But
I mean, you had a
yeah.
good day. I mean, it's not as if like it didn't work out. I mean, I also wonder, and I'd love for you to answer this too, is that like part of this is also race length dependent, right? Like if you're running, repeat miles, it's a different thing for, even if like you're running a mile race in terms of like how aggressive can you be versus how reactive can you be. These are like split second decisions. Whereas like you're running a race that's an hour to 2 hours long, it's like, well, you just can't be like attacking like on every whim, right? So
that's
I
true.
feel like the longer the race, the more it behooves somebody to like be more reactive as opposed to where like an aggressive mindset might work better the shorter the race. I don't know. You would know better than me, but I can see how someone could make that justification.
No, you make a really good point. I think because the pace was slow for all of us, not just me. I know like Frank Laura was up there pushing, Reed was up there pushing. I mean, heck, he threw in a really hard move. And it was funny because we chatted afterwards about how I thought I threw in so many. I was like, Reed, I threw in so many moves and I thought I would break people. And I turn around and you're like even closer to me on my shoulder. And Reed threw in his like big move at maybe 10 and a half, maybe 11. And he's like, yeah, dude, I threw in a really hard move. And I looked in like I could see like the reflection off of like some glasses that in Times Square. And he's like, I could see like I didn't drop anyone. So like it was just that kind of day. But you learn something about yourself and it's just to be tough and to hang in there. And I don't know, knowing that you can make those moves and recover and still like have that hope. But yeah, you're right. I mean, I like the marathon. Yeah, you just don't go guns blazing. There has to be some sort of, again, like emotional control, and that's what Monday is going to teach me is I know that I could rip for 2 hours, but what is the point? Because that defeats the purpose of this workout, you know?
Right. I mean, look at back like the last Olympic trials, right? I mean, like guy who's on this Road to the Trials roster, like CJ freaking went out, right? Like he went out extremely proactive, made a really, really aggressive move extremely early in the race. And no one went with him. It was just like, what? There goes CJ Albertson doing CJ Albertson things. And it was a really aggressive move. And at the same time, I think you ran really well at the trials, right? So you had a situation where you could have gone with them, but you probably thought to yourself, like, this probably isn't the best move for me. And I would argue you were probably right in terms of like that sort of decision.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, no, the trials is was a great stepping stone, I think. And I was 20th, and I'm dang proud of that 20th place. I think I was 2:15 on the dot. And I was
And you
like
got and
that
you and you
was
took down all your BYU compatriots.
yeah, that was fun. Can't deny that.
I mean, that was a tough day for a lot of people, that's for sure. And it was amazing to see people who really were able to excel in that. It was certainly a unique situation. We were talked about in episode one. Since last time we spoke, Tokyo happened. Now, I don't know if you have a relationship with them. I know Cam Levins has done a lot of training in the U.S. and is someone who's been on a lot of the U.S. circuit from a racing perspective. He's a Canadian athlete, just like your friend Rory, but someone who's like kind of omnipresent in the U.S. running scene as well. What did you take anything at all? Not that you had to, just from him running such a fast time in Tokyo?
Yeah, I definitely took notice. I was like following his live splits because I think it was on FloTrack and I didn't have a subscription. So I was just following along, and every split he was like right up there with the leaders. And then my coach Andrew was like filling me in because he had a subscription. So he was telling me how great he looks, and I was like, wow, this guy's really gonna pull it off. And running the North American record, like getting it from Khalid Carnoochie, like that was so impressive. And so yeah, I was like, oh, like that. He came out with the podcast very soon after that, and I listened to it, and I was like, I wish he would have delved more into training and what that looked like. And we have a rough picture now, 3 times a day, high mileage. I even saw something that he,
3 times a day?
yeah, he was up to 180 miles at some
Oh
point. Yeah.
my God.
He was training on a treadmill in an altitude tent, so amazing. And then doing, he did double threshold workout, so the Norwegian
Oh,
style,
the Norwegian thing. Gotcha.
right? Which I thought was like, man, this guy is just tough as nails. And so obviously, I don't want to promote that because I don't think that works for anyone but him. But I just was so inspired, and there's so many things to learn. And I followed his journey even after the World Championships, and for him to keep improving like that, it was just like such a, I don't know him personally, but gosh, I'm rooting for him. And it's even better that he's an ASICS athlete, I think. So, but yeah, it's just cool. And so like the first thing I did was went straight to his Strava, and he does have a lot of double threshold workouts on there that he does. But I pulled one of his workouts that my teammate told me about that I actually think I might try. So we're kind of teetering back and forth about what we want to do. But I was like, wow, what a great marathon prep workout. Like, I love that workout. And
What is it? Do
so,
you remember off the top of your head?
I might butcher it, but it's either a K or a mile. And then you follow it up with a very hot equivalent. I think it's a mile at race pace or faster, and then you follow it up with a pretty quick recovery K, and you do it again for times 10. So we're talking, 20K of over 20K of work, depending on how many reps you do.
It's like a
And he
really
did
hard float. Is that like the idea?
really, I would say so, but maybe for Cam, it was like he was able to, whatever you can do to recover. I think I want to say his. I don't want to butcher it, but his float might have been like 330 per K, which was like 530, but then he would do his miles in like I think 440, which his overall pace ended up being 445, if I'm not mistaken. So I was like, wow, okay, like that, talk about like the volume of work is what we look at here in the Mammoth Track Club. So if you can do that volume of work at that pace, that's a really good sign. So we might do that. And I'm inspired, honestly, by him. So, yeah, amazing performance. So,
There's a lot of ultra runners up in Mammoth as well. So I'd
yeah.
love to get their take on like the 180 week, 180 mile a week. Like we're talking like the Anton Kropitschkas of the world just being like, I don't care about miles. I'm going to run for 7 hours today or whatever. I mean,
Yeah.
180 miles a week, that is a lot. It's
Yeah,
a lot
it's
to
a
recover
lot.
from.
It's a lot. Yeah, exactly. Sometimes, like I said, three times a day, sometimes twice a day, but he was doing some pretty big work, and I think it took a long time to get there. But it's working now, so that's all that matters. So.
Yeah, for sure. Let's talk about footwear. You mentioned ASICS. I love talking shoes. So,
Yeah.
you ran the half. Did you run in your, what shoes did you run in? And are they the same shoes that you would wear like for marathon distance? Do you differentiate half versus the marathon?
I wore the Sky Plus.
Okay.
It's something that I've used in my long concentration marathon, long run workout. So I figured if I can do well and concentrate that long, then I can concentrate for an hour. So that's the race I'll be, or sorry, the shoe I'll be using for Boston. On my speed session days, I'll typically go with the Edge Plus. But I've been told the Edge Plus might fit my stride better and my cadence as a, so I haven't tried it enough, I don't think, in longer workouts to justify like, hey, I'm comfortable with going with this type of shoe. But there have been people who have run really fast times in the Edge Plus. So the Edge Plus are also good.
Yeah, they feel like the Edge Plus has the more traditional carbon fiber plate architecture that kind of scoops down and gets pretty low towards the bottom of the midsole, just above the rubber. Whereas like the Sky Plus, which differentiates from the Sky, whereas like there's you almost have like a centimeter of foam between the plate and the bottom of the shoe, which I think would be, I can see a lot of people, especially their 4 foot strikers slash running longer, kind of liking that aspect of it a little bit more than the more aggressive plate.
Yeah, and that's what I think you hit it on the head is like I know I'm going for 2+ hours, so I want something that's going to be more cushiony at my feet. I don't want my feet to die. So.
Absolutely. And then when you're going through your normal week, your weekly running stuff, what shoes do you usually have in rotation and what do you use them for? Right. So you mentioned like for,
Yeah.
the track workouts being more like the Edge versus the long runs, or maybe some of the tempo stuff being the Sky or the Sky Plus, just from like an easy running or recovery run perspective.
So I'm rotating right now between three different types of shoes. My new teammate that joined not too long ago, we were chatting and he kind of brought this idea up like how good it is to switch up, rotate your shoes because you need stock it needs 24 hours to like recover, if you will. And so I was like, oh, it's kind of like I guess that's smart. Like I didn't know any science behind it, but I thought, okay, like if I'm gonna compress a shoe for an hour or 10 miles or whatever it is, I want that foam to kind of recover and the shoe to be at its best for me. So right now I'm rotating between the three different shoes, the Kayanos, the Nova Blast, and the Cumulus. And I like kind of like where it's going because I feel like I am getting the most out of my shoe and the most out of my buck too. So,
Interesting.
yeah.
So I guess my question would be, why not just have like if you had a favorite shoe, just be like, all right, I'm gonna have three pairs of like the Nova Blast, right? Or three pairs of like I'm assuming you're in the Cumulus 25 because I know that's coming out soon, as opposed to the
23.
24, which was out recently. What was that?
I'm on the 23.
You're on the 23. Oh
I have the 20.
my God. All right.
Those are
Well,
about done though. Those are
I
about
was
done.
gonna say so, and then the Keanu is a very traditional stability shoe. So when would you utilize that? And I guess why? I mean, you're as an ASICS sponsored athlete, it's not like you don't have a number of options that you could go with.
I'm a terrible person to ask, and my girlfriend is, I wouldn't say she's mad at me. She's like, how can you just wear whatever you want? So I kind of just wear what feels good. So like I know that the Cumulus is like a more of a neutral shoe, and I run great for my doubles. But I do try to structure it in a way. Like I try to make sure that either the Nova Blast or the Kayanos are meant for my longer morning runs, and then my recovery runs are done in the stability shoe. And that, but that might not make sense. But for me, it's just like I don't know. I like that kind of setup that I have going.
So, are you in the Nova Blast 3 or the Nova Blast 2? I feel like I didn't have to ask, but you just told me you're in the Cumulus 23, so now I feel like I have to ask.
I'm in actually the three, yes. I did purchase the three and I like them a lot. So, yeah.
Oh, you purchased the 3?
Yeah.
Did you really purchase the 3, or they just sent them to you?
Well, you have like an account and you like purchase it through like the account
Oh,
website, you
okay.
know? Yeah. Something like that.
Okay. It's kind of like having like a gift card.
Yes. Yeah, exactly. Yep.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
Okay, that makes sense. Yeah, that's interesting. Yeah, I was a big fan. I love the Nova Blast 1. It was one of my favorite shoes.
Okay. Yeah.
I've told people this, like, I almost never got to 50 miles with it because that on
Oh,
first
wow.
at first blush they were like so propulsive and
Yeah.
unstable. I was like, I don't think this isn't gonna work great. And so like I wore them for like 2 runs and then I shelved them, literally and figuratively. And then I went back. I'm like, I bought these shoes. I should at least try, I think, give these a fair shot. It was funny, after I hit 50 miles with them, they like lost like 2% of their aggression. And then I was like, oh my God, I can't get enough of these shoes anymore. Like, I want to use
Wow.
these on speed days because they were like so
Yeah.
propulsive. And it seems like they are less aggressive. I haven't tried the 3. I do have the 2. I feel like the 2 is the opposite. Like, I need to like to break in the 2 before like it like kind of, had that same effect. But I've been a big fan of ASICS in the past for sure. So I actually had the Metaspeed Sky, the original.
Oh, wow. I still have those too. I'm kind of like hoarding them just in case. I look at the orange sunset color.
That's the one I had.
Is that the
So
one?
I
Yeah,
always
yeah.
wondered though, because like that, it seemed like the Sky is very similar to the Edge Plus.
Sky is very.
You know what I mean? Like the.
I think so. Yeah. I
Yeah,
mean,
when the Edge Plus came out, I was looking at the stats. I'm like, these are the same stats for in the Sky, the original Sky, not the Sky Plus. But it was like it seemed like they had like that they were similar in a lot of ways.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, yeah, maybe it's all in our head. I don't
I don't know. I know. I liked them. They were fast. For me, they were too. The plate was so firm. Because I'm a 4 foot striker, but I'm not fast enough
Okay.
to engage it at marathon pace.
I see.
So like it was more like a 5K, 10K shoe for me. As opposed to like I know for heel strikers, they like the firm plate because it just like rolls them through. Whereas like
Right.
for me, like anyway, who cares about Matt Chisholm's running technique? So let me just quickly move on. So we're gonna talk again before Boston. You've run Boston before. What's the travel schedule like for you for race week? The race is on Monday. When do you normally like to fly in and do whatever you need to do for that weekend?
I think this year we're taking a little bit different approach. We're leaving like a day or two later, so like I won't get into Boston until like Friday, which is good. I want to utilize as much time as I can at altitude, and I don't know. I think just like being in my routine more, and not that I can't get in my routine in Boston, but just be kind of being away from everyone and secluded, it really helps me. So flying in on Friday, and then essentially having 2 days like a normal, like a New York City race, you know. I flew in like Thursday night at like midnight, and I had Friday, Saturday, and then there was race day Sunday. So I feel like taking a similar approach has always worked. So yeah, leaving Friday and then doing everything I need to, and it's kind of hard to get out of Mammoth too. So I have to take that extra day to drive to LA. So that's a 6-hour endeavor. So.
And then, how much does time zones play a part in this calculus? Because when you're going from west to east, and then all of a sudden the race day logistics are early in the morning, all of a sudden it can really mess with potential time schedules. Like I remember when I've done the opposite, going from east to west, I actually relished the idea. So I'm like, hey, I have to wake up at 4. That's fine. That's 7 o'clock East Coast time. This isn't a problem for me. But I can imagine the opposite being less advantageous.
Yeah, you know, Coach Andrew's always shared with me, like, when you're fit, you're fit. Now, unless you're going like across seas, that's a little different. But
Fair
I mean,
enough.
we do travel 2 days before. Like, I don't know, what do they say? Like, a day for every hour ahead, or something like that. So I'm giving myself 2 days, and that's plenty. I mean, But when you're fit, you're fit. You know, you're ready to get to the start line and do whatever it takes.
Yeah, no, I like it for sure. Now, do you like to do stuff the day after Boston? You know, some people like to go to like the Red Sox games, or they like,
Yeah.
hey, I'm in a city and there's like all the best runners are here. Like, I might as well kind of make the most of it. Do you normally like to try to do stuff after the race?
Yeah, if I can walk, like last year, Boston, oh, it was hard to walk around town, and it was cold. Like that day was just really freezing, so I didn't do too much besides go out with my family. But if I can, I'm feeling like up to it, I'll definitely like whatever it is. As long as there is a glass of wine, I am all for it. So,
I love it. I love it. If BYU could see you now, Nico.
they wouldn't know. That's funny.
Nico Montañez, thank you so much for doing this. We'll talk again right before the race. Good luck with training, and I can't wait to talk to you then.
Thank you so much, Matt. Appreciate it.